My name is Joe Witte. I'm an entrepreneur, veteran, father, and proud team member at Tag One. Thank you for joining our podcast, Getting Transparent, where we get to hear the stories with people who are making a difference in our food and natural product supply chain, find out what drives them, and how they're making this world just a little bit better. This is Getting Transparent, brought to you by Tag One.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of Getting Transparent. Quick recap. Last year, we had an amazing conversation with Michael Mowdy. Michael, former NFL player and Penn State linebacker, had 9 surgeries, put a lot of trust into the doctors at the NFL. And unfortunately, a lot of opioids and ibuprofen totally destroyed his digestive system. Because he's a smart guy, he started to figure out, hey, there's this whole other product called CBD that can not only help relieve his pain, but also not have such a negative impact on his digestive system. And that led him to become an investor and eventually an executive in his company. So go check it out. Last week's episode on Getting Transparent with Michael Mowdy. Elon's the CEO at Alchemist Labs. He's been with the organization for, I think, more than 20 years. He's on the board of the American Herbal Products Association, a board member at the National Animal Supplement Council. And if I were to list, I like that shirt. And if I were to list all the other boards that take up the whole time, but Elon, give us a little background on your history, how you got started at Alchemist, what you guys do, and how you ended up as the CEO.
Yep. Well, first, Joe, thank you for having me on this podcast. It's an honor. We love what you guys do, and you're just protectors of the supplement industry. So thanks for that. So my history begins at birth. I suppose I was born to 2 scientists. Grew up in laboratories. Dad's a chemist, turned into a chiropractor, acupuncturist, herbalist. Mom was a microbiologist. My father had a line of herbal supplements he sold to his patients. And around 95, I started to work in the garage, pressing herbs, making tinctures for him. Around 97, the FDA picked up on some adulteration issues and offered some courses on self regulation. So how to make sure you have the right starting material using botanical microscopy. That was a course my father took, came back, gave me a huge book and said, hey, read this. Mm-hmm. And we started doing raw material inspection on our own material for those tinctures, failing a lot of stuff. That got up the attention of a lot of the vendors. The vendors became customers without us realizing we were a laboratory. And about a year later in 97, we realized we're actually a botanical testing laboratory more than a tincture manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And made the switch. We love to get to the bottom of these mysteries. And nearly 24 years later, now we have a staff of about 40 people and test almost 2,000 plants for about every customer in the industry.
That's awesome. So it sounds like early on, quality was important to you guys, right? Absolutely. Like understanding the science of where these plants come from, how they can impact us, how they can be, you know, sometimes an alternative to pharmaceuticals. Sometimes they could be the only potential solution. And granted, we've got, you know, I don't know what the number is, millions of different plants that grow in nature that can have different repercussions. You guys compete with some big companies. How do you differentiate yourself from some of these larger companies?
It's funny. It's the classic story of David and Goliath. Actually, Sudberg is my last name, shortened from Sudberger, which is defined to be South Mountain sheep herder. So if you go back to that original story, David was a sheep herder. Goliath was too big for his own good. Tripped over himself, and David came up quick and was nimble on his feet. We compete with these big, humongous consortiums of labs, global footprints, by one, just being experts in what we do. Mm-hmm. We're the only lab that specialized in plant identity from its origin. The other labs test tilapia, aerospace parts, textiles, and chamomile. Right. We just test plants. The other thing is we have this personal touch with our clients. Most of my clients are, we are on hugging basis, pre-COVIDian. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd even hug my clients this today with COVID. It's a family-run business, and so we've run it like a family. Mm-hmm. Our customers are become family. They know my kids. I know their kids. Mm-hmm. So it's that personal touch you don't get from going to the big labs. And that's pretty much the main differentiators. You know, we're specialists in what we do. We don't do everything. I don't believe you can be good at everything. You have to pick something, be good at it, or be best at it, and then just treat. I like to treat our customers how I would want to be treated as a customer. The word reciprocity is enormous on our lobby wall. Yep. I mean, treat people how you want to be treated. Employ people how you want to be employed. Have customers how you want to be as a customer.
No, I think it's been clearly apparent that culture is really important for you guys, and going back to David and Goliath, you know, like Malcolm Gladwell's book on the topic and getting into business is a fascinating read for anybody that wants to understand how you can be smaller and more agile and make a difference. And, right. and clearly you guys are doing that and you're doing it through personal relationships. But I also noticed that you, you're not afraid to make decisions.
Right.
I think the first time I called you, it took you probably about a minute and 20, maybe seconds to process on what we're doing as right. far as getting into transparency initiatives. You're like, yeah, I think there's something here. Let's talk because, you know, you recognize that there have been some issues in the industry. What frustrates you most in the natural products or dietary supplement industry that you're trying to solve?
I think right now the biggest thing that frustrates me is transparency or the lack thereof. Yep. You know, when we started the lab, I was also starting my degree in chemistry, and you would go to the lab at school, present to the professor your lab notebook and all of the details that went into your experiment. You didn't just hand the professor your results and say proprietary.
Sure.
That didn't work. And then you get out of college and that's all it is. But then if you have to go to court, there's nothing proprietary. So somewhere in the private industry, proprietary becomes a sort of blanket for, you know, I'll admit, for hard work and money invested into methodology, but also a blanket for crappy labs, a blanket for crappy methods, a blanket to deceive the consumers ultimately. So transparency is lacking in the lab industry. We've been sharing our results and our methodology since day one, mm-hmm. which back to my point, I was trained as a chemist in college while I was becoming a chemist at Alchemist. And transparency was how we started the foundation of this company. There's nothing to hide in this industry, unless, again, if there's something super proprietary, like you spend tons of money to develop a method or a product, then maybe you can protect some of that. But the results, the chromatograms, all of the data that goes into a passing or failing result has no reason to be hidden behind a blanket of proprietary legal words and whatnot. So that's what bothers me the most. We're trying to undo that by convincing our clients it's the right thing to do by sharing the results. And, you know, it goes along with what Tag One is doing, is breaking that, mm-hmm. the glass door, so to speak, of transparency. And also, I think making it comfortable and safe home for data in our industry.
Are you seeing a shift, like as you start to evangelize transparency in the industry, are you seeing more company leaders embracing it? Or do you guys scare some people away, which is like, man, we're not going to work with Alchemist because that's part of their culture. And we're a clandestine operation. We're very protective. We just, you know, we're, I don't want to say there's nothing wrong with profits. You need to have a profit in a business, but they're solely margin driven and that's just not part of the culture. What are you seeing?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. And actually, and I've been pushing transparency for a while, but one of my major endeavors as CEO of Alchemist Labs was to really target select clientele at the end of last year and go in for the kill on getting customers, current customers, to share their C of A's on their website. Mm-hmm. And my hit list was a bunch of small, nimble customers of ours who I felt didn't have to go through 15 lawyers to make a decision. Lo and behold, the one and or ones that have actually taken this and are running with it are some of the biggest industry players mm-hmm. on the earth, I should say. And pretty soon, probably about next year, you'll start seeing our C of A's on websites all over the internet, so that those companies' consumers can see the quality of the ingredients that go in those products. So it's funny that a lot of the little guys were all excited about it, didn't get to it, perhaps bandwidth, perhaps, you know, their IT is their cousin, you know, doing their website or something like that. And the big companies have embraced it, and it's passed through all the legal hoops so far. So I was pleasantly surprised.
That's great to see. I know that sometimes, you know, it's hard. I mean, listen, we're at our jobs. We get caught up day in, day out at our jobs, right? So it's why it takes leadership and vision in order to implement these and sometimes to push down to explain the why behind it. And, right. and some of the whys aren't just, hey, it's the right thing to do. But when you do things like show product provenance and show product quality and safety, you know, the biggest thing you're talking about is building trust. You're building trust with consumers. And when they have to choose between product A and product B, then they're like, well, I feel more trust with this one. I'm going to go with this one. I literally was just talking to my mom, who's very much in focus in her health and is dealing with, inflammation, or minor arthritis. And we talked about turmeric and she's been taking turmeric. I was like, you know what? They adulterate turmeric with, mom, you know, is lead acetate because it's the same $50. She's like, you're kidding me. And she's like, I like to get my tea from China. Is it safe, Joe? I'm like, I don't know if it's safe, but man, it sure would be cool if we could help find the companies that, that could put C of A's on their website to feel good about it. That's a heck of a start. So yeah. One, you engage the consumers. Two, you talk about retailers have to make a choice from where they're going to make shelf space on. Three, an area we're looking at is like, can you talk to your insurance providers? Are there a way to reduce your insurance and your risk by being more transparent in what you're doing? And so when you start to have best practices, it actually makes your business more sustainable and more efficient across the board. I think that that's part of the, you know, the message we're trying to push out there. You would say, you know, on that note, if you're talking to a consumer, what should consumers be looking at when it comes to natural products or dietary supplements to protect themselves? What should they be looking for?
You know, I always tell friends and family are always asking me what supplements to take and how to know. And I've got a list of customers we work with all the way from farms to finished products. And I always tell my friends and family to look for simple products. You know, if it's got 50 ingredients in it, there's something going on usually, or if the 50 ingredients are things that you don't understand and they're not plants or whatever, maybe find someone else. Also, you know, I tell customers or friends and family to look for ingredients that have some science behind them. There's a lot of plants on this earth that are traded in the industry. And there's a lot of false claims being made, even with, you know, wiggling through the legality of making claims on supplements, people are still doing it. And so look for things that have some scientific data behind them. So perhaps some of the branded ingredients, the novel ingredients this industry has to make. You know, previously you mentioned why they would share. And I'm going to put the question, why wouldn't you share? Like, what are the reasons why you wouldn't share that data? Again, it's either there's something to hide or it's falsely proprietary. Mm-hmm. Or you don't have the IT company bandwidth to put it on your website, like some of the smaller guys. But the fact is, I think, you know, it's funny you mentioned your mom. I was going to mention the next generation of consumers, but clearly your mom is asking these questions. How do I know my tea is good? Well, buy tea from a brand that's a major brand that maybe has a little data on the quality of their product. Mm-hmm. You know, China is not bad. China will give you whatever you want. You want the cheapest stuff, you'll get it. You want the most expensive, highest quality stuff, China is wonderful to sell you exactly what you need. Yep. You'll need a testing lab to verify you got what you think you got. And that doesn't matter where it comes from, China, Bulgaria, Texas, it doesn't matter. Get it checked. And hopefully if you can work with a company who shares the data that goes that backs up the quality of their products. Mm-hmm. The next generation of consumers, the younger folks, Gen Z or whatever we're calling them now, is more interested in what's going in their body than any generation prior to them. Yeah. They're reading labels. They're pretending to understand what all these chemicals mean and do. They're listening to influencers on the internet, which is interesting. But they want to know. And the brands that go ahead and share and let them know before they're provoked by regulations to do so are the ones that are going to withstand the scrutiny of the next generation's buying practices.
Are there brands out there that you can share that you think are doing a good job in this?
Yeah, absolutely. The one that stands out the most is Gaia. Gaia Herbs is actually not a customer because they're such a great company and so self-sufficient. We know them very well. I have great respect for them. I give my children their products. Mm. One of the rules I break in the case that I usually give my own kids products that I've tested.
Yep.
As an example, and I'm not paid by Gaia, I'm not on their board or anything, but the fact is they have their program, Meet Your Herbs, and you can actually buy an expensive bottle of elderberry syrup, but you can click on a label on the back of their product, and it brings up a lot of data that you would want to know about the quality. They've decided to give a huge amount of real estate on their packaging to this program, which I understand it has very few actual click-throughs. Not a lot of people are actually clicking on it to meet their herbs. But the fact that it's available as an option, I think, makes all the difference. And it says such a strong statement about confidence and quality in the ingredients that they're like, bring it, show us. There's really no other company in this industry doing that at that level. Except for cannabis, surprisingly, at least in California, if you purchase cannabis at a recreational dispensary, they lead with lab testing. It's one of their first value propositions of, you know, here's this product. Here are the values that we found, the phytochemical values we've found in this product. Here's the lab that we're using to do it. And they lead with it like it's their number one selling point. So I thought that's pretty interesting that the dietary supplement industry can learn a little bit from the cannabis industry.
Yeah, for sure. And so, I mean, yeah, we've always pointed to Gaia, and they're not using our technology, but that's, you know, certainly a case of where, you know, with our QR codes, how to like put it on your packaging, and you can have C of A's, and to put a widget on your website, show that full traceability to make it pretty easy. But same thing, like, hey, they don't use our technology, but we always point to them too as a company that has kind of led from the front.
Yeah.
And I think you're starting to see more companies saying, oh, wait a second. There have been good benefits from this, mostly like you and I are talking about them right now, and they're not even our clients or they're our competition in some degree. So I think that is hopefully sometimes it's that domino that makes other people realize that it's good to do. Your company culture, as you mentioned, is really important to what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
Transparency is part of that. You just by nature are an open book and refreshingly honest. What other ways would you like to see natural products companies be more transparent in how they operate, whether it's internal with their partners? And I think one challenge too, I'd love to get your perspective on, is contract manufacturers in the supplement industry.
Sure. So company culture is absolutely critical. My wife is a retired organizational psychologist. Mm-hmm. She's now a domestic engineer. We're all both grateful that we can do that for our kids during this very strange time. But the fact is, she learned very early in her master's and her PhD that company culture is like really, really, really important. Mm-hmm. People just it's almost like a cancer, and it can spread, and it can spread faster than you can think. And once it gets the bad culture, I'm speaking of, once it gets so bad, it can really ruin a company to the point where you have to have sort of slash and burn, you know, restart. While she was working on her PhD and also working for some of the biggest companies in the earth, making a very good salary, I learned about work-life balance from the opposite side. Yeah. So I learned what it was like to have a spouse who worked into the night and woke up early to then work back. We go back to work and work all day and then come back. And so I remember feeling like lonely and I hated her job. I loved her paycheck. Mm-hmm. I hated her job.
Yeah.
And so I always thought that, you know, as I develop Alchemist, that I want to have a company that my employees are happy, but more than that, that their spouses, their partners, their brothers, sisters, moms, dads, whatever, are all, mm-hmm. they all like that, their person's job. Because when you go home and your spouse wants you to quit, but you know, you don't have the courage to go look for another job or leave your seat, it's a tough situation. So I try to run this company like a company that I would want to work for. I try to be a boss. Try to be a boss that I would want to work for. And that's hard sometimes because, you know, we have to get things done in time and we have to make money because we're not a nonprofit. But we can also have a great time doing it. You know, today we have a Halloween party. This is one of my former employees who didn't like our company culture or didn't follow SOP for something, for PPE. No, we have a great time at Alchemist, and that shows through at trade shows, shows through when any audits come through. If you have a chance someday to come to the lab, you'll see it's a fun place to be.
Cool.
And I think that's critical to making good chemists and producing good results.
Yeah, and listen, ultimately, I think what you're developing, what you do with a good culture is you develop sustainability. So, you know, when I look at organizations and cultures where they're grinding people 60, 70 hours a week, either they anticipate there's going to be churn, which there's a significant loss in financial loss when there's churn. And then when somebody says, you know what, I think I can go get paid as much or more someplace else and work 40 to 50 hours a week.
Right.
Then why wouldn't I do that?
Right.
There's burnout. It's just not a good business practice at the end of the day. You know, listen, we've all had those weeks where we need to put in 50, 60, 65 hours if something's going on, and I'm always available. You know, 15, 16 hours a day. But, you know, I appreciate TJ, you know, our CEO is like, yeah, you want to go work from Florida for the week? Go work from Florida for the week. We're all working remote anyway. What difference does it make? And then the other business practice too, which is, you know what you realize for a lot of your team members, it's not always about the money.
Right.
You know, to work for somebody that they like, to have a culture they enjoy, who lets you go watch your kids' ball game in the middle of the day because that's also important. You're like, you know what? Like, it's not worth it for me to go to earn an extra $10,000 or $15,000 a year in an environment where work-life balance is just thrown out of whack.
Absolutely. Those words are on my wall just under reciprocity, work-life balance. And, you know, we're over in Southern California. There's biotech south, there's biotech east, you know, Irvine and San Diego and LA. There's tons of companies that my chemist major employees could go leave college and go get a an entry-level job and get paid more than they do here at a year in. That's a fact, and I don't deny it. I don't have a $1 billion budget, but I have got a culture that they can come home on time to their loved ones and enjoy life. And the smart ones realize that that's more important than an extra 10 grand in their paycheck or whatever. I will never, ever call someone on a Saturday morning and say, you got to come in and do this work or, you know, you're fired or something like that.
Right.
It's a 9-to-5 job here. We work hard. We work late when it's necessary. It's not always, doesn't happen often. But, you know, that's the important part. And that's why I have a huge group of 10-year plus employees.
Yep.
And they're young. Some of these people just got out of college and they've been with us still for this much time, or they had one crappy job before us and now they found out this is better than getting paid 15 grand more, but working 60-hour weeks.
And that's almost unheard of these days, right? Yep. I mean, typically it's a 3-year tenure someplace and whether, you know, and hey, sometimes it's just all the industries are evolving really fast and we have to reinvent ourselves and adapt, but to stay someplace 10 years is almost unheard of. Especially out of college. Well, kudos to you guys. I think that says a lot about culture internally and externally. Recently, you shared something on LinkedIn, kind of a crazy story, two crazy stories. The first one was you found, a lot of what you guys do is do testing and deliver certificate of analysis, C of A. It's certainly an important part of the, any part of the natural product or food and supplement industry. And you found there was some fraud going on with your C of A's. Tell me about how you found that, what your reaction was and kind of like, were you surprised and how you're trying to remedy that?
Yeah. So it's happened a couple of times before. It's happening a lot lately, which is, the greatest compliment is imitation or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm not flattered by that. So what we found is that our customers are savvy enough to know that they're being sold elderberry from China around the COVID times, and our C of A looks a little bit different. Like the font is off.
Mm-hmm.
Us to say, is this legit? And we found a number of companies. One actually asked if they could do this. We said no. They still did it. They posted the C of A from the material that they bought. So it was the C of A for a vendor, not the material that they bought online, but they changed results. They changed lot numbers. They changed dates. They changed pass or fail. Lawyers make money in this type of situation because they write letters to other lawyers and back and forth. And then it usually goes away. We haven't had to sue anyone at this point yet. Just pay a lot of angry legal lawyer letters. What happens? People are counterfeiting our C of A's. So, we are here to provide confidence in the industry that your material is not counterfeited, yet our C of A's are getting counterfeited, which is, which goes into, what opportunities Tag One has to solve this problem and store these C of A's on a safe and secure website so that our customers can refer to that for the final check. So let's say they see a C of A floating around online, they can go to your website, check it to make sure it's legit, and then proceed with a purchase. So right now it's sort of out of our hands. We can't really do anything about it because we give our C of A's to clients. They sell their material with our C of A's accompanying them.
Yep.
And then beyond that, it's really out of our control until we all kind of agree of a landing page for online storage of these C of A's. And that's something I'm working with select clients to change their sort of thought on that. And actually, I generally don't sell fear, but that is a part of this argument, is that if we don't do this, your material will be sold with false C of A's, and FDA is going to go to your door first, and then make my door a few times after.
And I think ultimately what we want to look is like, how do we as a global operating network have companies that we can trust? And sometimes that means taking that extra step to make sure there's trust in the data and documents that we're sharing that represent the product that we're buying and selling and putting out there. And then when the companies either who are on the fringe say, I guess we better do it the right way, because now there's things like blockchain that can verify this, start to grow up and realize there's benefits doing that way, or they don't. And then people stop doing business with them because they don't have that, and we can get it cleaned up. I was reading a good article by this guy, Gary Weber. Gary used to work at the FDA and USDA. He says one of the biggest challenges of what he does, he talks about risk in food, in the food industry, is that, when we eradicate, like, let's say measles, like we've eradicated measles. So then the result of that is nothing, right? Like, hey, we're fine. And then people forget that there's actually a potential problem there, which is why you have to keep taking the vaccine. I thought that was a really good analogy. And so in this case, we may have to invest in blockchain technology. You know, they have the invisible DNA sprays on products to say what is sent is actually received and do some testing. So there's some really cool things coming out there. But inherently, we want to get to a point where we just don't have to think about it because we have the infrastructures and the technologies that are led by what you talked about, which is the culture. And it has to be led from the culture first.
Right.
For sure. Right. So after you posted on LinkedIn, you know, what you found, and obviously we're like, dude, like, this is obviously a problem. Why would people do this? Something even crazier happened. Talk a little bit about, you know, how you had to deal with a whole nother scenario.
It's funny while you're saying that, I was like, man, which bucket of crazy things from this year should I talk about? And I know you're talking about the ransomware. So, yeah. But it's been a crazy year. Tons of bad, tons of good. Feel a little schizophrenic about everything. But shortly after we wrote a bunch of letters to a bunch of Chinese companies about our C of A counterfeit or fraud. And again, I'll say it again. China has great companies, great products, great people. You just have to pay for the quality you want, period. Mm-hmm. But this happened in China, and we wrote a few Chinese companies letters from our lawyers. One was next door to the other. One was next door to that one. So, it's, you know, probably family business of some sort. No response, of course. About a week or two later, our servers were hacked, and it was a ransomware issue. And they actually got in through our IT firm and held our servers ransom. Our IT firm found out on a Sunday day. They called us Sunday night, let us know. Monday, everyone came in. Monday afternoon, everyone went home. And what had happened, they had grabbed our servers. I understand after talking with the FBI, the FDA, and Homeland Security, all who actually visited our lab throughout this process, which was very exciting and interesting, that generally ransomware guys don't mess up your data. They don't touch your data. They just kind of put it in a box and they want you to pay for it. Kind of like putting a boot on your car and you have to pay to get the boot off.
Yep.
Instead of paying their ransom, which is $1.2 million, which I thought was funny because they clearly didn't get into our financial software to ask us for $1.2 million.
Yeah.
Maybe 120 grand, maybe 12 grand. We could have maybe put that together, but 1.2, they clearly didn't hack into QuickBooks at all.
Yep. Yep.
Your bank. But rather than paying that money, our IT firm was successful. Just essentially, instead of paying to get the boot off, we sawed off that wheel, put a new axle, new wheel on the car, and drove off. So we essentially had really good backups. Fortunately, it took 2 weeks to get back up online. It was, you know, COVID started this year with a, you know, oh, you know, am I going to be able to survive? You know, me personally, and then it was, is my family, and it was, you know, also it was like, is the company going to survive? Are we essential? Or are we going to be able to keep our doors open? So there was that threat of loss of everything. And then just literally months after that with the ransomware, there was a new threat of loss of everything because they had, you know, I don't have proprietary anything. I just have data. And if they lock up our servers and we can't get it, I mean, be, you know, weeks or months before we remake our IT system,
right,
and will the industry stick around? So it was a massive threat. Good news is that the IT firm put everything back. We had good backups. And about 2 weeks later, we were back up and running. And we're still dealing with lawyers and insurance companies regarding that whole issue. Even the FDA actually got involved. They saw that link, that post, or the LinkedIn, that article I shared, and they wanted to know a little bit more about what happened. They sent some FDA agents over to collect data. Homeland Security was here. Lots of broad-shouldered IT guys with badges taking computers in and out. The FBI was involved. It was a pretty stimulating few weeks.
That's insane. And hey, we all like a little bit of spice in our life, but not necessarily to that extent.
Pass.
I one of my old businesses, we had an operation in Karachi, Pakistan, and one in Mexico. So I wish I could say I've never experienced something like that before,
right.
But actually have, and it's stressful, but I mean, thank goodness that you guys were able to kind of work your way through that. But it shows, the polar opposition in how you operate and want to operate with transparency. And when you called out, you know, certain, you know, value systems online and certain companies who are doing it in contrary, in all likelihood, there's no certainty that that ruffled some feathers to some degree. So
we have no evidence that the perpetrators of the CVA fraud were the perpetrators of ransomware. And in fact, the three government agencies, the FDA, FBI, and Homeland, never made that connection, but they were certainly curious about it. And that's why the FDA actually got involved, is because this is, you know, prior to our CVA fraud, you know, we're acting as a sort of gatekeeper to quality. We are the enemy of adulteration. People don't like us. People like us, and then some people don't like us. So we are a bit of a target, and the food chain was compromised, essentially, which is why the FDA got involved, to see if there was connection and any fraud or any, you know, any criminal activities that they could, you know, put their finger on. Right. It's actually still an open investigation with Homeland Security. They haven't closed it. There's no data for us to know, because it's an active situation. And I understand a few other companies in our industry that I can't name, but got hit with a similar situation right around the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone went home with COVID. And, you know, I've got a pretty secure IT system, more secure now than earlier this year. But we let people work from home without having secure networks. We had to keep working, had to send people home. So it gave a lot of these bad IT outfits a really easy opening to do a lot of bad stuff. So I'm glad that's behind us, knock on wood. We're now with a different IT firm. We have different setups, different security, different remote situations. And I feel a lot more confident that we won't experience that again.
Something else we need to be aware of is securing our data, being aware of cybersecurity for sure. So,
yeah.
You know, quick thought before we dive to the transparent 10 here.
Yeah.
What do you see as the outlook for the natural product and dietary supplement industry? Like, what's your kind of vision, and what do you think is possible as it begins to evolve?
You know, when I entered the industry, I was 17. We called it the Wild Wild West. The industry called it the Wild Wild West. The committees, you know, I'd go to OPA meetings and we would refer to this industry as the Wild Wild West. And I think we've done a really great job of emerging from that. Mm-hmm. Still, this industry does most of its change after a black eye. After we get punched in the face, that's when you learn the biggest lessons, unfortunately. And whether that be, you know, a massive adulteration, a fraud in the industry, you know, some scandal is where we make these big changes. And we've made big changes. You know, the last big one I can think of is probably the former attorney general's escapades with DNA testing. And we learned a lot as an industry about where that really powerful technology fits or doesn't fit. And, you know, testing was increased. So I think the industry has some more growing up to do. I think we're doing a great job as a whole. You know, people always ask us is how much stuff fails, how much stuff passes. You know, it's getting better every day, every year. The other key piece of data is we work with some of the best companies in the industry. So I don't have a lot of failed data. I have a lot of great companies with great products, just making sure their great products are still great. So we don't have a ton of fails to report. But I think the industry is moving forward nicely. I think we're working well with the FDA and working well with the FTC. And there's a lot of hope for better communication and dialogue to make sure that the consumers have access to safe and effective products. And the companies selling those safe and effective products aren't getting sued into oblivion by making claims that they can't.
Right.
So, you know, you couple that with emerging technology and science with branded ingredients and novel ingredients and more, you know, focused phytochemicals, kind of mimicking the pharmaceutical industry, but putting it on a pile of chamomile in a sense. Yep. And we have some really cool products on the way to help, you know, humans of Earth be healthier.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, you look at, there's really two main components, efficacy and safety, right? Like, is it going to work and do what it says it's going to do? And granted, everybody's body's a little bit different, that the result may vary. And is it safe? And is it safe to take, not just tomorrow, but over the course of a lifetime?
Yeah.
And that starts in knowing the source of your ingredient and knowing how it's processed.
Absolutely. The first step in GMP quality is identity.
Yep.
Why bother measuring the metals and pesticides or the phytochemicals in something that you don't even know if it is what it's supposed to be? Because I can take caffeine, put it on palate scrapings, and if you just measure for caffeine to indicate green tea, you've got a great pass. But the fact is you've got caffeine on wood palate.
Right.
And it's not green tea. I could take small pieces of green tea and put it on wood palate. And if you're looking for green tea with your DNA testing, you'll see green tea and it's not quantifying things. So, you know, you can very easily pass things with the wrong methodology. But the industry's come a long way, and we're working towards settling on that. And I think there's a lot of hope. We're not going anywhere for sure.
Awesome. All right. You ready for the Transparent 10?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's do it. What's your proudest achievement?
Alchemist.
Something you love to do.
Aquascape, which means like making small ponds and fish tanks and things like that in lab glassware, as an example.
I love it. By the way, my goal is to create a jellyfish tank. So we're going to have to huddle on that one.
That's pretty hard stuff. Jellyfish are, so here's this moss and sticks and water and in old lab glassware.
That's cool. Something you hate to do.
Oh, answer really, really long novel emails. Like scroll emails.
I get a feeling you're ADD like me. I concur. Guilty pleasure.
Guilty pleasure. Playing chess while I'm at red lights on my phone.
Favorite band.
Medeski, Martin, and Wood.
Favorite movie.
It changes. I really enjoyed the newest Borat, the subsequent movie film. It was pretty fantastic. That's top of my head right now.
All right. Favorite vacation?
Camping. Camping with the kids and my wife.
Love it.
In the trees, Sequoia, Yosemite, that kind of stuff.
That's a good one. Something you suck at in business?
Paying attention, maybe. Remembering. That's a tough one for me.
Something you're great at in business?
I think I've got a lot of tenacity. And I don't quit very easily. So back to the David and Goliath story.
What's your big, hairy, audacious vision for Alchemist?
I would like to see the Alchemist logo on finished products. And I would like to see those silly influencer people on whatever platform they use these days saying, take this product because it's got this Alchemist logo on it.
I love it. Elon, it was awesome to talk today. You just had like a great impact on the industry, both as a leader, as well as your personality just shines through and you brighten up the room. Your transparency and willingness to take risks, ability to be forthright is an important reason why a lot of changes are happening. You can learn more about Elon and the company Alchemist. If you can't see the logo on the back of the wall, it's alkemist.com. Elon, it's been great to talk to you today, brother.
Joe, thank you for what you and TJ and Tag One are doing. We really, really need it. We really appreciate it. And if you don't already know, look it up. Tag One, great company. They're going to change the way transparency is accessible in this industry. So, Joe, thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
You bet. All right. Take care.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Getting Transparent, brought to you by Tag One. Please subscribe to receive notifications for future episodes and visit us at www.tagone.com.